Judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. Okay. All persons having business before this state attorney of the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, draw near, give your attention, and ye shall be heard.
Thank you very much. We'll turn to the substantive motions calendar, and we'll hear USA against Robert Schultz.
That was very good, the second gavel.
If it please the court, Robert Schultz. This case is about the right to petition. Congress shall make no law abridging and the right of the people to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Arguably the most important sentence in the Constitution. Scholars refer to it as the capstone right. We refer to it as the accountability clause. It guarantees the right of ordinary citizens, private citizens, to hold the government accountable to the Constitution's prohibition clauses.
Mr. Schultz, what's the relief you're seeking?
A reversal of the lower court's decision granting summary judgment, granting our motion to dismiss on the grounds that the blue folder is protected by the First Amendment's right, guarantee of the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances, and it's protected by the First Amendment's free speech clause. I would also ask, as we have at the court, we've motioned the court to expedite the matter. Three of your sister circuits have addressed this issue recently, the right to petition, the D.C. Circuit, the Ninth, and the Eighth. The D.C. Circuit, these issues, the parties here, and these issues have been before this court before. It was 3 years ago that I stood here arguing these same issues. The right to petition versus the tax laws. In that case, it was a summons. The government doesn't like what we're doing. We're petitioning the government for a redress of grievances and have been trying to reconcile.
You're asking for a stay of a permanent injunction, right?
At this moment, yes. We're asking for a stay pending the appeal and expedited
right.
appeal.
So why don't you stick to that, the motion for a permanent injunction. What's the protected First Amendment expression that, in your view, has been improperly enjoined?
I missed the first part of the question, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
What is the First Amendment expression which, in your view, has been improperly enjoined by the district court?
The last 10 words, the petition clause, the speech clause, due process as well, has been enjoined.
Just answer my question. I'm not trying to be difficult. What is the speech that you're being kept from articulating?
Yes, Your Honor. There is the matter of the blue folder, the speech in the blue folder. That speech is speech that is embodied in a series of documents, statements that we have encouraged workers to submit to their companies, their paymasters, asking the paymasters to take those materials to their legal counsel to review for accuracy. That's the speech that is being enjoined here. We believe that the statements in those folders are true and accurate. We also have another motive behind we see the petition for the blue folder as a separate petition for redress of grievances, which we have a right to do. But we also have a motive. We've been petitioning the government for a redress of grievances, trying to reconcile the differences between the Iraq Resolution and the War Powers Clauses, between the USA Patriot Act and the so-called Privacy Clauses, between the Federal Reserve System and the so-called Money Clauses, as well as...
And you're doing that how? You're doing that how? By urging people not to pay tax?
No, sir. Not directly. What we're doing is claiming and exercising the full rights under the right to petition. The historical record defines the full contours of the meaning. No court has ever, in the history of this country, declared the full meaning, the full contours of the meaning of those last 10 words. No court has ever fully defined the rights of the people and the obligations of the government under the petition clause. It's carefully placed there by the founders as part of the overall balance of power, the checks and balance system. What it means, according to the historical record, and the record of this case, includes our thorough research.
If no court has ever spoken to it, as you've just indicated, what is the basis of suggesting that you're likely to succeed on appeal so as to justify the grant of a stay?
In the very words of Judge Rogers from the D.C. Circuit, in her concurring opinion, which we said ought to have been a dissent, she said, the D.C. Circuit dismissed, or we filed a declaratory judgment action in the D.C. Circuit asking the court for the first time to declare what our rights are, what the government's obligations are under these last 10 words. The court said, we put our interpretation on the meaning based upon the historical record from Section 61 of the Magna Carta all the way through our first Congress and through the Declaration and so forth. We put our interpretation on it, which is as follows. We said to the D.C. Court, and we said to this court and other courts, that the meaning of the petition clause is this. If the ordinary private citizens, not public employees, we're not dealing with the public concern doctrine here, but if their ordinary citizens have some evidence that the government has stepped outside the boundaries drawn around its power by the very terms, the plain language of the Constitution, we can petition them for a remedy, for a redress.
Your contention that the Section 7408 is unconstitutional, I assume that's the basis for the injunction.
No, Your Honor, we do not argue that any provision of the Internal Revenue Laws are unconstitutional. We just say they're being unconstitutionally applied to silence us and to shut down this nationwide rights petition process, which is underway for some time and is a very serious effort. Our interpretation, to continue, is that if government doesn't respond to these proper petitions for redress of grievances, they just ignore them. They stepped outside the boundaries. We petition for a redress and they ignore us. Then we have the right to peaceably, in the words of the First Congress, to peaceably procure relief by withdrawing our allegiance and support to the government, by withholding, retaining our...
But no court has yet so held, is that right?
No court...
So then, once again, what is the basis... Excuse me.
Yes.
What is the basis in terms of decided law which we could look to so as to conclude that you're likely to succeed on the merits on the appeal and therefore entitle you to a stay now?
It's in the record of this case, which is the historical record, thorough research from scholars and others, is presented to this court in the record of this case, going all the way back again to Section 61 of the Magna Carta Common Law.
I understand.
In the words of Judge Rogers, she said in her concurring opinion, the court in that case said, they are constrained. They cannot agree with our interpretation of the accountability clause based on two cases by the Supreme Court. Those were the Smith and the Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T. Smith and Knight cases involving public employees. In the Smith case, I mean, I can go into the job, but they dealt with public employees, state legislation, governing collective bargaining rights of public employees, governing agreements procedures for public employees. In the Smith case, they said the highway workers had no right. The government, the state, did not have to listen or respond to those public employees who were speaking to the state through an illegal, unrecognized association or union. In the Knight case, it was the converse. Up there, you had public employees who were community college professors, and there the Supreme Court said they must go through their union because that's the way the state legislature has set it up. So the D.C. court said they're constrained by our by those two decisions. Judge Rogers, however, said, wait a minute, this stare decisis doctrine may not apply here because the facts and circumstances of our case, and we're standing here on similar ground, our case involves not public employees grieving on-the-job employment conditions, but citizens grieving constitutional torts. And not only are those facts different, but the arguments are different. She said in her 9-page concurring opinion that she checked the briefs of the Knight and Smith cases, and this argument involving the historical record and purpose of the last 10 words was not in those cases, was not advanced. And she said it's going to be interesting to see how the Supreme Court handles this question. Now, there are 9th and 8th Circuit decisions on this question all in the last 2 or 3 months. We've got 90 days to get to the Supreme Court normally, okay, with a petition for a writ of certiorari. I would ask this court, please consider, look at this material carefully, and consider sending a message to the Supreme Court saying this issue, this first impression issue, needs to be determined because we have acts of Congress, we have statutes that are trumping our rights under the Constitution. That we have
Mr. Schultz, let me ask, interrupt if I may.
Yes.
I just want to get certain things straight so that I understand the situation. You are the founder and chairman of the We the People Foundation for Constitutional Education.
Oh, yeah, Your Honor.
Are you a member of the bar?
No.
Now, I know that you're, as they say, familiar to the courts, but you're not a lawyer. What is the role of Mr. Mark Lane?
Mr. Mark?
Is he your counsel?
No, he's not representing me. He is representing the two corporations in this case. He would be here today. He extends his apologies. He's just turned 80 in February. He has heart problems, and he's under orders from the... He's undergoing a series of tests, and he was ordered not to travel.
I see. So he's counsel to the two organizations, and you are proceeding pro se.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it the case, as suggested by the U.S. District Judge in the District of Nebraska, that you have not filed an income tax return since the year 2000?
Your Honor, that's true. And what I did in 2002...
No, I just want to understand the situation.
But, Your Honor, not everybody has to. I have deliberately put myself in a position where I receive absolutely no money.
Mr. Schultz, I'm just trying to ask... I'm trying to make a living.
There,
Mr. Schultz, I'm trying to make a living.
Okay.
I'm just trying to ask you a question.
Oh, okay.
Just answer and don't give me a long McGill, okay?
I'm sorry.
You haven't filed an income tax since the year 2000. Is it the case that the Internal Revenue Service is currently investigating whether you've had any taxable income for the tax periods, I guess, from 2001 through 2004? Is that a fact? Not whether you're contesting it. Is it a fact that the IRS... Maybe I'll ask opposing counsel, since you seem hesitant to respond.
I'm involved in a series of... Are they... 2003, 2004?
Well, the District of Nebraska says the tax periods of December 31, 2001, 2000, December 31, 2002, December 31, 2003, and December 31, 2004. This is in materials submitted to us by the Department of Justice by opposing counsel under a letter of September 14, 2007.
I've seen the letter. There is a summons to my personal bank. That matters before the Northern District of New York.
All right.
There's no other investigation.
All right. Thank you very much. We'll hear from opposing counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. Excuse me. My name is Bethany Hauser for the United States. The United States is opposing the motion for stay pending appeal because the defendants here have no likelihood of success on the merits of this appeal. The speech in the blue folder has been properly enjoined. The district court found that the statements were in that blue folder were fraudulent and were intended not merely to be submitted to tax professionals, as has just been argued, but were also intended to be submitted to employers and to the IRS.
Well, does it say on each of the folders that to check with your lawyer before you go do this?
The district court found it said it had that disclaimer on many, but not all materials, yes.
Not all?
Yes. The district court also found that that disclaimer was ineffective because of other statements in
the material. Well, I don't know how the district court found it. I just want to know what it was there.
It was on most of the materials, yes. I also, if there
are... We've received a couple of letters from you or your colleagues, including the September 14 letter to which I adverted earlier. We also received a September 17 letter in which you oppose the application of Thurston and Paul Bell for leave to file a brief as amicus curiae. Ordinarily we're quite liberal here in letting amicus enter, and I was a little struck by the toughness, shall we say, of your response. But tell me very quickly why this is such a big problem.
I believe, as it explains in the letter, there are issues raised by Mr. Bell, which are not being raised by the defendants here. Indeed, I believe that the constitutionality of certain sections of the Internal Revenue Code were specifically disclaimed as an issue in this case.
Well, that may be, but you know, I think we're capable of making those, and especially with your help and your letter, I think we're capable of understanding that if it's the case.
I also understand that Mr. Bell was seeking to participate in this argument today as an amicus, but he doesn't appear to be here.
And no such application. I'm not aware of any application, and it wouldn't be granted at this late date.
Right,
so you have no great regret about our taking his materials in and giving it such weight as they deserve?
No. There are no other questions.
Under what authority do you claim that you're entitled to the names of the persons to whom this information was furnished?
Well, we believe there's a compelling government interest in enforcement of the tax laws.
It doesn't say that in the statute. I mean, there's no provision in the statute for you to secure that kind of information, is there?
I believe Section 7402A of the Internal Revenue Code provides for injunctions. Further injunctions for the enforcement of the tax laws. We saw injunctions here under 7408 and 7403.
It doesn't say specifically that you're entitled to names of people to whom this information is furnished.
That's correct. This court has case St. German of Alaska, which lists of people participating in a different sort of tax scheme were required to be turned over to the government.
What would be the harm in granting a stay so that these questions, which may or may not have importance, can be considered in due course by a merits panel?
The harm of granting a stay would be the delay to the government in the payment of taxes and in the information that's required to be turned over about the people who have evaded their taxes.
In the absence of a stay, these blue folders would be continued to be given out, is that right?
Depending on the scope of the stay, yes. And that would, of course, cause further harm to the government and also to people who might expose themselves to civil and criminal liability by failing to properly pay their taxes on the basis of the materials.
Explain that to me. I'm not sure I quite understand. What is it that would happen if...
If the material in these blue folders continued to be distributed, resulting in further withholding of taxes from the government, that would result in harm to the government also, obviously, but also in harm to the individuals who might expose themselves to civil and criminal liability.
It's all speculation on your part. I mean, the logical consequence of what you're suggesting and you want us to hold for you, is that if a tax protester puts together a list of names, puts me on it, for whatever reason, you're entitled to that list of names because we may at some point not pay a tax or seek to find some relief from the tax system? What is, I don't understand the urgency in your having to have those names.
The urgency,
yeah,
is that individuals who are not paying their tax, their statutes of limitations.
Well, you don't know that whether they're paying or not. Certainly not in my hypothetical.
You're suggesting that, I mean, the injunction is not to make up a list of names, it's to present a list of names.
There is a list of names. Right.
Well, these are names of people who just requested information. It doesn't even say they're going to use them, is it right? Some of them may just... how do you get the names, anyway? How are the names presented?
I'm sorry?
Everybody who writes in gives their name?
A list of names to whom the materials have been distributed.
Have been distributed, but not necessarily used.
That's right. It's not clear to me how either the defendants or the government could know whether those individuals use the materials.
Maybe you could just explain for me, what are the mechanics of the district court's order? Just what is it that would be done with what?
The list would be required to be turned over to the district court. I believe that absent the stay, it would have been required
to you or to the district court?
To the Council for the United States, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Yes.
Yeah, that is the difference, yeah.
Yes.
So what's wrong with his having these materials turned over to the district court and held under seal until a merits panel considers this matter? What would be wrong with that? That would seem to answer your concerns about the possible mischief. But on the other hand, it would reserve the status quo long enough for a merits panel to consider the legal arguments here.
It would certainly resolve many of our concerns, Your Honor. The only further concern would be delay, and the IRS obviously can't investigate whether those individuals have been failing to pay tax returns until it has the list of individuals, and because statutes of limitation expire as time passes.
So those names would just be a basis for further investigation.
Yes, and it would also be evidence that those people were involved with this.
And not necessarily, because you don't know if they used it. It's a basis for further investigation, number one, if they used it.
Yes.
And number two, if the government lost any revenue as a result.
Right.
Part of this motion is to expedite the appeal. What's the government's view on that?
We have no objection to an expedited appeal.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mr. Schultz, I'll give you 30 seconds to respond, although you haven't reserved any time, but why don't you take some time?
Thank you very much. I meant to. On the issue of the payment of taxes, there is nothing in this record to support this notion that anybody has stopped withholding. This blue folder is about withholding. It's not about payment of taxes.
Mr. Schultz, do you have any objection to an order that would stay these proceedings but would require you to turn over these materials to the district court to be held on the seal until further order of the court?
No strong objection, but I do object. And also, Your Honor, the other major part of the order that hasn't been discussed yet, it's so overly broad and vague. There is a motion to modify that the lower court dismissed. If you take a look at the complaint, it focuses on this blue folder, withholding. But if you look at the order of the complaint, we had to shut our website down totally because of the language of the order. Any material similar, you know, what does that mean? We're involved in advocating that we have a right to withdraw our financial support from the government if the government refuses to justify its behavior when it steps outside the boundaries drawn around its power, and we petition them for a redress of that grievance. So everything we do is focused on the right to petition and the right to retain our money as the only nonviolent way, the only way to procure relief peaceably when the government totally ignores petitions for redress are constitutional torts.
You've heard, of course, of a long line of cases involving the Quakers, most notably, and other religious groups.
Your Honor, I'm glad you brought that up. I meant to argue that. The Astor case. This court decided the Astor case last year and touched on the right to petition. I would encourage, to keep it brief here, I would encourage the court to look at Schultz Declaration Number 9 in the record, Exhibit B. It's a surreply to the Northern District on this Bank Summons case that's still pending.
That's Schultz Declaration?
Schultz Declaration Number 9 in the current case, Exhibit B, where I argue this issue. Astrup did not file a motion for a petition for rehearing, didn't take it to the Supreme Court. This court based its opinion in the Astrup case on a partial sentence. It didn't complete the sentence. And it said it was relying on the Ramsey case, an Eighth Circuit case. When you go to the Ramsey case, you see that that Eighth Circuit relied on Lee. So the question is, did this court misapply the standard of review set forth by the United States Supreme Court in Lee in the Astrup case? We argue in that surreply that you did, and for the reasons that we put forth.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. We'll reserve the decision. And we'll turn to the day calendar, and the first case is USA versus Sakanovich.